although maybe I will.
If I make you laugh, don't laugh.
Cool.
Don't laugh. No. I love laughter.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever painted laughter or captured it in a piece of art?
No, but I know when I'm working on something good, like, it kind of makes me chuckle a bit. Like, it's like kind of almost like an inside joke a bit where I'm like, yeah, that's going to be a good one. You know, it kind of like nice. makes me smile on the inside a bit.
How often does that happen?
Not very often because I don't usually make good work. No, I'm just joking.
I was going to say, is that because you have high standards?
Yes.
You
yeah.
do?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
yeah,
that's probably a good thing.
You have to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get to a level and then, you know, work at that level and be like, okay, now I can take it to this next level of, and then I try really hard and get to that level. And you're like, I can't stay here. You know, I got to push this level and keep pushing the work constantly.
You know, that's sort of the hallmark of a good artist, no matter what genre or kind of art it is.
Right.
You know, yeah. I think of Bob Dylan, for example.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The first time I saw Bob Dylan, he did Blowin' in the Wind, but I didn't recognize the song until the third verse.
Oh, wow.
He changed it around so much that I didn't even know it was Blowin' in the Wind. I mean, you know, so that there's a kind of restless questing that artists excel at.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And even when you do make a good one or someone really likes it or it's like, this is amazing, and you do that, like, inside, I'm like, okay, I'm already thinking of like, what do I need to do something else now. I need to work on this next piece or this next idea.
So one thing leads to another. There's mm-hmm. a whole chain
constantly.
Reaction.
Mm-hmm. Huh. And it's all connected, yeah.
Huh. Where does the idea of living the moment completely fit into that?
In the decision-making process of the work itself. So if I have an idea, and I think it's going to be this concrete thing, well, something would happen in a moment that might change that. So I have to either go with it, the change, or try to backpedal and go back to the original plan. And I think that's where in the moment really works for me, because ideas shouldn't be concrete. You know, like you, as you work through a medium or with multiple mediums, you have to let that go. Like, you can't let the original idea go, but you have to like kind of go with where the idea is taking you, kind of. Well, that's how I work, you know.
So. Do the materials dictate that a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a lot.
Yeah, about 50-50 for what I do. Yeah, it's like, uh-huh. So sometimes you'll be working with a flower or a part of a bug or something, you know, a piece of glass that you really thought was going to work for something, and then it'll break or a cat will eat it or a dog will come by, you know, like life happens, you know, shit happens. And so like, you know, it'll change somehow, or you'll drop it or, you know, the panel will crack, or there's all these things. And then you have to ask yourself, that's when you're in the moment, when you're like, do I go with this or do I try to find something else that's going to make it how it was, you know? So that's how you have to stay fluid with the idea.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking to you because you're having a moment.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You have like four separate exhibitions around the valley, or you're part of.
Yeah, right.
Tell me, I know about the two Down Valley because I spent an hour and a half at the one in Glenwood Springs this
wow,
morning.
Thank you.
What a wonderful space that is.
It's beautiful. It's a great space. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the better ones in the valley, really.
Yeah, it's a great space.
Yeah.
Three full walls and then the great windows on the side there. So
yeah, north-facing. Isn't that what an artist loves,
north-facing
light?
Good light there.
Yeah, and then I saw your piece over at the Valley Visual at the launch pad.
Yep, another great group show.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then you have some things going on up Valley. So tell me about those.
Right, yeah. So there's another group show at Colorado Mountain College at the Aspen campus, I think. And that's called Open Book, and it's a show about using the book as an object or the object as a book, kind of blurring that line of how a book is an object, and it can be, you know, it can work physically, but it can also be like a sculpture. Mm-hmm. And so the sculpture I have in there is a 3D scanned head of myself, and then I took it into a Fusion 360, which is kind of like a CAD program, design program, and we sliced all the pieces of the head to quarter-inch slices to make the pages of the book, and then on each page, I took it to the laser cutter and cut those slices out on acrylic, clear acrylic. So the head is this just clear object, and then on each page it is like a headline from a New York Times or the Washington Post, CNN, and they're kind of contradictory headlines because we kind of live in like these truth bubbles now of like you're in the NPR bubble or you're the Fox News bubble or anyway. So it was kind of the sculpture is called the Daily Head Transplant, and that's kind of what it's wrapped around is like that concept of like every day I get on and I look at a news and then I almost have to check the sources of that news. It's crazy. Yeah. But that's that show, and it's a good group show. I think there's like 30, 40 artists in that. Kay Cesar curated that one. She was great. And then that one's going on. And then the Red Brick right now, I have five negatives from a 16 by 20 view camera that I built. And
you built a camera.
Yeah, it's great. I should take your portrait sometime.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Why? Because I'm trying to take everybody's portrait. Oh, that's okay. Another show. I have. I'm cooking up another show right now. Like it's called About Face, and it's. I'm just going to show the negatives, the direct light input, basically, from a human's face onto that negative, onto that paper, and then grid those. So they're like kind of like identity grids, like 10 foot by 10 foot, 16 by 20 panels of everybody's portrait in the negative. So people can look at that and not really get an idea of identity. And then like everybody's smartphone can flip the spectrum of their colors on their phone. And so then they can use their own device to go to the positive. And so that.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but to get back to the camera, so it's a 16 by 20 view camera. And I used a Carl Zeiss lens from the 50s. It's a Jena lens. And it gets incredible results. It's like 68-inch bellows on there.
Wow.
And it's equivalent to like an 800-megapixel camera. It's or 4 8x10 camera negatives, 16 4x5 negatives. It gets incredible resolution for it. So you can see the topography of a person's portrait. So the images that I'm showing at the Red Brick, though, are flowers. I did like a study of some still life irises, and those five negatives are there, and then I did five positives on the other side of the wall. So you can look at one side of the wall and see the white background with the black irises, and then look on the left and see the black background with the white irises.
Oh, that's interesting. Not at all like what you have on display Down Valley.
No, uh-uh. No, the stuff Down Valley, that's I've been working with that style for almost 20 years now.
Oh, how about that?
Yeah.
It's a very involved process. I watched the videos on your website, which, by the way, what is that? Good.
The website, goodnight35.com.
Goodnight 35, the and number 35.
Yeah, the number 35. And that means like saying goodnight to 35mm film. So that's like...
Oh, okay.
Because we don't really use that anymore as like a mainstream medium. Uh-huh. But the reason I started, you know, this series here, like You Change Nature, and the reason all of that got started was because back in 2001, 2002, I realized film and analog mediums were kind of going out of style, but they were not going to be the main thing anymore. Digital was taken over. Photoshop and Apple computers and scanners and digital cameras. Those are what we all use now. So I started thinking of the film itself as the beautiful object rather than using 35mm film to shoot through or to get a photograph with. I started using that cellulose and manipulating that, burning it, collaging it, and then re-photographing it, kind of based off, you know, like Marshall McLuhan and The Medium is the Message. I was reading a lot of that at the time, and then I just started working with color slides, and I did about almost 1,000 of them in this 1-inch by 1.5-inch format. So I would take like honey and crickets and then like glue and tape them together and then re-photograph them or put them in slide machines, like those old Kodak carousel slide machines, and take them to parties and just project them on the wall, all these things. And the honey would still be like dripping off in slow motion. And people, it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun. And that's when I realized, I was like, I like this this way of composing on a very small scale to make something that's on a very large scale.
Huh. Well, as I said, the process is very involved, and it starts with scavenging materials.
Right.
Talk about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, whenever I'm walking outside, you know, I pick up trash or plastic. I go bug hunting. I used to go a lot more. We used to live in Charleston, South Carolina, and there were a lot of bugs there. Mm. And so I kind of stocked up on insects and just natural little objects that I find around me all the time. And, you know, I would just put them in little bags and collect them. And then I have hundreds and hundreds of these jars, bags, all sorts of stuff. So it starts with collecting. And then I usually have a sketchbook and I like draw out ideas of like what I want it to look like. And then I go back to those little samples and I kind of like paw through them and I find like which ones are matching up with the idea for the drawing and then the watercolor to get the color right. And then right to the light table. And then I work on the light table and sheets of glass and I compose the for the You Change Nature show at Glenwood Springs, the figure. So the figure starts out of wheat, and it's a little wheat stalks or grass. And so he's and she are completely made out of the line quality. Now, the line of the figure is made out of the wheat. That's a better way to explain it. Mm-hmm. And then so that layer of glass is done, and I use acrylic sealer, and I seal that so it doesn't move or fly off or with the wind. And I have to wear a dust mask, too, usually, for some of the more fragile works. And then once that layer is done, and then I work, you know, in front for foreground and then background for background. So there's a whole layer of bees in the front of the figure. And then, excuse me, her hair is made out of a crow feather. And then behind that is a dandelion. And then behind that is layers of little ripped up pieces of plastic that surround her whole figure. So,
and parts of the figures are insect parts, like bug legs, mm-hmm. or yeah. stand in for arms. And
right. Yeah.
Really ingenious constructions.
Right. Yeah. And they're all really small. You know, uh-huh. like well, the ones that down in Glenwood, those ones are 4x6. So those are 4x6 sheets of glass. Yeah, and the figure can be made out of anything. You know, like you said, like insects and bugs and. Any kind of pieces like that. So, and then the background is like usually like a watercolor wash on glass. And then once all those layers are done and they've been acrylic and sealed independently, I photograph all those layers and then I bring them all together and do resin, like a two-part resin, and seal all those together. So it's 7 layers of glass all sealed together.
So you're photographing... something's not computing here.
Yeah. You've
assembled all these constructions, multiple layers, mm-hmm. and you're producing an actual tangible photograph of that?
Yeah, because that's like the other half of the show. So the originals, like I said, are on layers of glass.
Okay.
And once those are done, I will take a camera and take a 100mm macro lens and then take... really close-up photographs in like a grid pattern going across the whole object. So I get about 25 and 40 images that are close-up photographs of each part of that original glass layers. Then in Photoshop, I stitch all those together to make a really high-resolution one file of that object.
I see. Mm-hmm. And so the pieces hanging on the wall in Glenwood are the blow-ups of that composite photograph?
Correct, yeah.
And then you're putting resin over that?
Yeah, that's the whole other part of the process. So, well, we'll go back to the glass slides here. So once the glass, I call them the glass slides, but once those are done and they've been photographed, then I mount those onto a light box and then build those towers with the magnifying glasses for them to encase the originals.
Okay.
So it gives that viewer that one point of view on a three-dimensional object, which is kind of contradictory of sculpture itself. You know, sculptures should be in the round or completely, you know, movable, or you should see it from any angle. But I'm working on a way of sculpture that's like just you can only see it from one very specific angle, which is interesting. But once those are done, right, then I go on and I have that Photoshop file, that photograph, and I do large scale 4 foot by almost like 4 foot by 5 foot prints of those. And that process is, I get the file first, I touch it up, make sure everything I want in focus is really in crisp focus. And then I print that on a piece of like acetate, like a clear substrate that has like a gelatin on it. They're called transfers. And then once that's printed, like to scale, like 4 foot by 5 foot, I let that dry for a couple of days. And then I do UPO paper, which is like a plastic kind of watercolor or oil paper. And I lay that down. Then I transfer that image onto the UPO paper using like acrylic medium, one part acrylic medium, and like three parts isopropanol alcohol. So it's like it's going to pull that image off that acetate and stick it to the UPO paper. So it becomes like a giant Polaroid transfer, or if you've seen those, or it becomes this kind of like a wavy kind of image that's like floating on top of that UPO paper. And then once that's done, I seal that with a varnish, an MSA UV varnish to protect those colors. And then I mount that to the whole thing to a piece of aluminum. And then I trim off the edges, and then I do a pour of resin on top of that to seal it all in.
Wow. Yeah. So that's going to survive the apocalypse.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to build a house out of them when I move away from
there. You go. Wow, that's a really involved and interesting process. How did you come across? It must have taken a long time, a lot of experimentation.
Oh, yeah, tons of experiment. A lot of failure, learning and listening and working with other artists, you know, like being at the Anderson Ranch is a pretty cool place to be because you're constantly surrounded by artists that are coming through there, and you can share your work with them and help with their work, and then they give you feedback on your work, and it kind of just naturally happens. But like I said, I've been working on this technique for almost 20 years now, so mm-hmm. I mean, I've just from trial and error for that long, I would hope I'd get
something different.
Something.
Well, they're very compelling images. They're very compelling images.
So, like, that's – we just talked all about just process. But the content of the latest show at You Change Nature is there are five individuals, and each one of them is kind of independently dealing with how we are a species that is exponentially growing, and we are surrounded by finite resources. So how each of these individuals are dealing with that, is it good or is it bad? We don't know, but some of the images at that show, you know, for example, like one of the individuals is really sad and takes it really to heart, the At Your Feet image.
Yes.
Yeah.
That one.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, uh-huh. That one. And then Your Reasons, she's like just sitting and doesn't even really care. That's the one to the left of that one. So she's like not even really thinking about it. It doesn't really bother her like some other people. And I think that's exactly what's happening, you know. So that's the process we talked about first is like, yes, definitely involved and takes a long time. And then the content, I think I wanted to, you know, talk at least about what the
And those five figures are very simple line drawings, mm-hmm. pretty much, superimposed on. Which part of the process do they come in?
At the very beginning.
At the beginning.
Yeah, I start sketching the figures in the book really at the, you know, they'll be in the sketchbook, there'll be like 20 or 30 of them. And then I kind of whittle it down to like the top, you know, top 10 and then top 7. And then like, okay, you guys are out. And then down to the top 5, kind of like, you know, making a song or anything where you're like, start with a lot of things. And then I kind of edit and whittle down to like the top 5.
You mentioned it briefly earlier about the pillars, the black pillars with the porthole lens that you look through.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure out what exactly it is I'm seeing when I look through that lens. Is it a photograph inside that black pillar? Is that what I'm looking at?
Yeah, no. You're actually looking at the original layers of glass and the real bugs and the real lizards and the real wheat and the real dandelion and the real plastic that have been affixed onto pieces of glass and then resined all as one whole.
So that's how it appears to be 3D,
right?
Because of those layers.
Exactly. So you work a quarter inch deep on each layer, and then when you magnify that, the lens has that like dimension and parallax shift a bit, so it looks like it's even more dimensional than it really is. So it's kind of it's a great play in the eye that I've always loved, the lens with the depth. It used to be like in the 70s, you'd see it too in like movies when the guy gets afraid and then it like zooms out, but the background zooms out differently than his head. And it's like, you can kind of see, you'd be able to see it, but kind of using that effect. But
interesting. Well, you know, the idea of a black pillar in the middle of things is kind of, I don't know, surprising and mysterious. Mm-hmm. It's like, what's in there? What's in there? And then you look through the little lens, it looks like a porthole, and your eye, that's what's in there. But you don't know exactly what it is, which is the mystery of it.
Right, yeah. That's exactly what I wanted, you know, to keep that mystery. Because, you know, the answer is the answer, but the question is like where everything... Questions are so much better than answers.
Oh my God, can I quote you on that?
Yeah,
that
totally.
Is killer. The answer is the answer, but the question, wow.
But there's more.
Better copyright that, dude. Pretty soon it's going to be a bumper sticker.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But like I'm saying, it's like it's better to leave the viewer with some questions and that they can then answer themselves or at least roll over in their head rather than like be so straightforward with your art or song or music that you're like, that's exactly what that is. You know, like it's not, you don't get as much resonation through culture, I think, that way.
Well, poking around on your website, this process that you've described so well here, there's a lot more on there. You did a little stop motion kind of claymation film there's a video of there. And you've done a lot of painting. You've done some sculpture.
Right, yeah.
A lot of drawing. What haven't you done? What do you, what do you want to do? What's coming next for you?
Like I said, I'm working right now on that portrait series, that About Face portrait series. And up to about like 270 portraits just in that series. So I'm really focused like right on that. I got some other ideas I'm cooking around too. I mean, I'm always painting and always drawing and always working on some other side stuff and things like that. But yeah, that's what I'm working on now. So,
And you're an actual resident at Anderson Ranch? Is that?
No, I'm the studio coordinator of photography and new media. So I kind of manage the photo building there.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. And that leaves you enough time still to pursue your own art?
Yeah.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. So I work I work at the ranch full time and then work on my other work after or before work usually. But yeah, definitely I still have time to work on my work. So.
Uh-huh. That's good. Mm-hmm. How did art start for you? Where did it start? How did it happen? Did you go to art school? Did it happen before that? Tell me a little about that.
Yeah, I've always been, you know, I love art. I love visual, you know, stimulation with, you know, anything that had to do with like painting or drawing when I was a kid. I was all over it, you know. And then my dad got me like a little wind-up 220 camera, and I really liked that. And I shot with that for a long time, actually, all through middle school and high school. And then I got to borrow, he had an Olympus OM-1. And that's when I really was like, oh, I love this. And I actually started to go to college for biochemistry and then basically dropped out after about a year and a half. And I was like, I can't, I want to be an artist. I like photography. I like painting. I like drawing. I like sculpture. I like, there's, I can't do the other, that's too much on the other side of my brain. I have to, there has to be some sort of creative element for me. And so I stopped going to school there and then became like a park ranger kind of aide for a couple of years and then kind of figured out what I really wanted to do. And then I went back to school in Kansas City at UMKC and got a studio art degree there in 2001. And then did independent study at the Kansas City Art Institute for about a year with like a color project that I was working on at the time. And that was like 2001, 2002. And then I taught for almost 10 years. And then I decided I wanted to go back and get my MFA. So I got my MFA from Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana in 2015. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Huh. And what are your aspirations in the art world? Do you see yourself doing a big New York gallery show, or is that something you even want?
I don't know. I don't really think about that, you know, like I see that, you know, at the ranch we see, you know, artists and, you know, everyone, you know, I don't know if, I mean, it wouldn't be, I'm not going to say yes or no, because I think just working is the most important part for me, like having time and every single day to actually work on something. And if something like that happens, that'd be great. It'd be a great, but it's not really my focus. Mm-hmm. My focus is to make work right now. Mm-hmm. You know, like Banksy has a cool quote. It's like, he's like, you don't go to a, he's like, oh, that, I remember I had to think about it. He goes like, fame is like a byproduct of something else. You don't go to a fancy restaurant and look at your steak and be like, I can't wait to shit this out, you know? Like, you don't, like, that's not really a thought. It's a great quote. Yeah, I really like that. It's a quote. But it's like, all those shows and all that stuff is like a, those are all byproducts of something that you've actually already done. So when I think someone just thinks about that, I think it kind of deludes their work or yes, the purity of their vision in the first place.
Yeah, you know? That makes perfect sense.
Cool.
That's a very sane way of looking at things, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Benjamin Timpton, thank you for joining us here on Express Yourself.
Hey, thank you, man. Thanks very much for having me. This is great. Yeah, it's my first radio interview, so.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, it's
all right,
man.
Cool. Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. Well, I'll stop the recording first.